we have at least one Yekka here with us, so we need to start exactly at 1 o'clock. Here we are. We're doing Super Tatis for Parshas Lech Lecha. I have two stories. The first story I learned about last week through an Alshich in Koheles, and I was floored by it. It's a Yerushalmi Nazir about Rabbi Akiva. We have been familiarized with the story of how Rabbi Akiva decided that he wanted to spend a lot of time with Talmidei Chachamim, by like the story of Rabbi Akiva with the rock, and he saw the rock eroding, and that story, as well as his motivation, to marry Kalba Sivua's daughter. But there's a story in the Yerushalmi about Rabbi Akiva when he was just Akiva, and he was on his way, and he came in contact with a mes mitzvah. So the mes mitzvah, you have to, you know, this is now your mitzvah to bury. And he decided that, you know, he needed to ask a shiloh what to do with it. So he took the mes mitzvah, put it on his shoulder, walked about four parsaos, which is, you know, over an hour's walk and a long walk, especially when you're carrying a corpse on your shoulders. And he walked to certain Talmidei Chachamim, and he said to the Talmidei Chachamim, listen, look what I've done. What am I supposed to do? And the Talmidei Chachamim said, you know, it's very nice that you have such good intentions, but for every step that you did, you're like a shofech damim, because a mes mitzvah is kone makomo, which means that you should bury it right where it is. And all the time that you had carried that corpse, you were doing halanas hames, and you were slowing down the process for somebody to be buried. And because of that, you're like a shofech damim, you're like a murderer. And obviously, Rabbi Akiva didn't take this lightly. He was makabel at that very moment that he wasn't going to leave from the feet of Talmidei Chachamim. There were two, and that was the beginning of his excellence. That's the way that the story ends. It was the beginning of, you know, his path towards becoming an extraordinary Talmid Chacham. So I want to make two diyukim in the story, which is just fabulous. It's in the Seventh Perek of Nazir, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, for those who are looking for it. It's astounding. The first thing that I think is, usually when somebody tells you you're a murderer or you're a bad person, the cognitive dissonant way to respond to that is not, I'm never going to leave your feet again. Usually the way that people respond to is, no, I'm not. Or an excuse, you know, if you're a little bit more refined or something else. What was it, you know, if we want to talk about how Rabbi Akiva became Rabbi Akiva, part of it had to be that there was something inside him that made him able to listen to somebody when they said something extraordinarily harsh, was able to accept it and integrate it instantly. So, I mean, that's obviously a mita of an extraordinary person, but for people like me and maybe, you know, some others, you know, there's at least the ability to listen to somebody, you know, when they say something to you and to try to think about what should be incorporated. That's sort of an extraordinary mita. That's one thing. And the second thing is, you know, a large percentage of being a Talmid Chacham who's giving Hadrocha is that you can't be too harsh. A lot of it is public relations. So when you tell somebody something, one of the things I've learned is the first thing to do is validate their experience or make a joke or something that makes them feel comfortable to hear what you have to say and try to explain what you're saying and everything else. We don't see this in the story. The story is basically to go straight in and say, hey, by the way, you're a murderer, not a murderer times one, but a murderer times a lot. You know, so it must have been that they saw something in Rabbi Akiva that made them able to feel like they could say something comfortable like that. So I guess the second lekach I would take from that story is that part of being involved in the hadrach of other people, it can be a parent, it can be, you know, in a more formal, you know, professional chinuch environment or anything, is that you really kind of need to read your audience. And you need to be able to read your audience so well that they knew that this was the right thing to say, and it worked. You know, we don't get the stories about when it doesn't work because that's not exemplary for us, although I can tell you my own. But it's just important for us to think about that, and those are the things that made that story so magical. The next story is a story that happened in front of my very own eyes. I was speaking to a man who was very, very distressed. And this man, for many, many years, when a certain Rosh Yeshiva is in town, has the anhaga to drive a Rosh Yeshiva from one place to another. And this man, who has that wonderful anhaga, walked with me to the parking lot where he was going to get his car, and then he was going to drive back around to pick up the Rosh Yeshiva and take him to his next destination. And the problem was that the man who I was walking with was very, very distressed. There was something that was bothering him, and it was causing him a lot of mental anguish, to the extent that, like, you know, he was pretty, you know, pretty upset. And I spoke to him for a minute or two, and all of a sudden, in the middle of it, he stopped like on a dime. He said, "I can't leave the Rosh Yeshiva out in the cold. I'm sorry. I've got to go. I'll figure it out." And then he just boom, zoomed. And I just thought that, you know, when people are in distress, their world gets very, very small. And I was just, you know, impressed that there are people out there who can subordinate their own very strong and visceral emotions to be able to take care of doing a mitzvah. And that's obviously a very instructive story for all of us. Okay, a couple interesting things. This week is mostly Rishonim. So Ve'amin ba'Hashem ve'chaveil tztaka. By the Brisbane of Asarim, Avram Avinu believes in Hashem. It's considered stucca. It's really remarkable, says the Sefer Ikorim. This is like really philosophical here, but he is blasting philosophers. He says it's really remarkable that you've never seen any of the philosophim, which are the philosophers, have never attained nevuah. They've never been able to attain or caused a change in nature. But we see the Nevi'im and the Tzadikim and the Ma'aminim have. Think of all the stories about Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa and the oil and all the other miracles, Rabbi Pinchas ben Yoris splitting a sea, Eliyahu at Har Carmel and all the miracles that happened there, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah going through the Kivshan. It like goes on and on and on and on. And he says this proves that our tzaddikim can attain more because of their amunah than the thinkers because of their thought. And that's an important thing. That it comes out in the Sefer Ikarim is that we just need to be appreciative of kind of the magic of the way Emunah and Bitachon work. Next one is Kum Hisalech Ba'aretz La'arko La'rachba Kilecha Et Nena. This is from Rabbeinu Bachaya, Rabbeinu Bachaya ben Asher, who was in the base medrash of the Ramban. So he says, Kum Hisalech Ba'aretz Pshat Pashtus. It's, you know, walk around Eretz Yisrael, see how beautiful it is and appreciate it. Lefi Chazal, you're supposed to make a kinyan, in the land. But he says something which he refers to as al derech haseichel, which I think is really kind of wild. He says the idea, his halech, is like, behis halechecha tancha osoch. This is a pasuk in Mishlei. Bihisaleich can mean like when you're really meditating or thinking about something. So what does that mean? You have to really, really dive deep into thought about the concept of the Aretz. So when he says he's Haloch v'nasoa Hanegba, there's this concept, for example, called Hanegba. And you're supposed to think about it and understand it. So Avram Avinu did have a journey, but his journey was more of an intellectual one than anything else. And he actually has a very interesting raya. Now, I'm not sure this is a knockout punch, but it's still very powerful nonetheless. He says, do we see Avram Avinu walking through all of Eretz Yisrael? Do we know about that? Do we see any psukim indicating, you know, that he had, you know, took under an effort to walk through the entire borders of Eretz Yisrael? No. It must be that he's seeking wisdom by contemplating some concepts that are hidden there. So that was the idea. And I think that it's important to know that there's kind of a running game and a passing game with, you know, the journey of Yiddishkeit and monotheism, at the beginning of the story is that Avraham Avinu has a lot to do. Some of it is with his hands, some of it is with his brains, and some of it's with his heart. So the Kuzari is the next one, still staying in Rishonim. So Lech Lecha says, go to Eretz Yisrael. There's a mushal that he uses, which I think is very nice. It's like a plant or a tree. Is that, you know, if you go to like a botanical garden, you'll see that different plants grow in different areas, different trees. You know, some need tropical environments, some need dry environments. You know, a cactus does not need the same things as the flora and fauna that are in a rainforest. He says, you need the right type of soil. He says, if you're interested in becoming an Adam HaShalem, and thinking back to, you know, the words of the Ramchal and the Mesilas Yesharim, if you want to become somebody who attains Shlemus, completion, you need to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's where it's done. And he brings a really interesting raya. The raya is, you see, by the Nevi'im. So many Nevi'im had Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael, but not so many outside. And he says that that's a clear proof. So obviously this speaks to the Shevach of Eretz Yisrael, but it also brings something that, you know, that is also relevant for maybe giving a lekach to our, you know, our family for setting ourselves up for success, is that, you know, the place where you're doing something really makes a difference. So I like to set myself up often to learn at my kitchen table. But the kitchen, as you know, is the epicenter of Jewish life. So since the kitchen is the epicenter of Jewish life, a lot of the happenings in my family happen in the kitchen. So if I'm interested in trying to have devoted concentration on a sefer, I need to think twice about setting up there, because it will be a place for interruption. So again, it's, you know, you have to set yourself up for success and consider the place. One other thing, this is, we now set the clock back. This is my last thing. I'm helping one of my children prepare to write an essay for an essay contest, and they chose, they want to write about why people sleep. So I thought that it was apropos to mention this in light of the fact that we just turned back the clock, and I'm sure that some of the other tatties on the call are probably excited about a longer night of sleep on Friday night, or a potentially longer night of sleep on Friday night. So why do we sleep? So Pashat Pshat is, it's healthy. Kadosh Baruch Hu made our bodies need to rest, and part of resting is, you know, part of resting is, you know, closing your eyes, letting your brain rest and whatnot. So that's Gomel Nafsho Ish Chassid, a concept which I visit often. Next, there's a piyut, Oda Lakel says, Simun Leval Neshama, Leshev Shmo V'Chalama, V'Orak Orachama. He says, Urunaki B'chol Laila, every night, Nishmaschem Ola Lamaila, Latin din v'cheshbon lefa'ala miyotzer erev v'voker. I mean, why do we go, why do we sleep? It's because there's an element of din every night. Every night, Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to say, so what'd you do today? You know, what could you have done? There's a little din v'cheshbon that happens, you know, kind of a micro of what there is to come. So that's one. That's number two, rather. The Gra has a piece in Mishlei where he says that the neshama goes up to the yeshiva shalmaila, and learns the secrets that it couldn't understand even when it's awake. That's also, there's more about it in like the Hakdama that Safrat Sniusa, if you're interested in that kind of stuff. And the last one was something I came across this week, which was quite scary, is that a neshama goes up and it gives din v'cheshbon on the machshavos. So that's, that is his piece on Ki Ofer Shamayim Yolichas Akol Uval Knafayim, or something. I'm forgetting the second half of the pasuk, but there, that's it's on that pasuk that he suggests that you know, your thoughts, you're going to get a din v'cheshbon and a recordation not only of your actions but your thoughts. So be mindful of that. Last thing, I'll leave you with your thinking question. This is a tough Rashi. It says Leman Yitav Li Ba'avurech V'Chaisan Nafshi Biglalech. So he says, why, you know, Leman Yitav Li. So he says, say you're my sister, so it'll be good for me. Rashi says, Avraham Avinu says she knew Li Matanos, that they're going to give me gifts. So I want you to say you're my sister, so I'm going to get gifts. It's a very interesting thing because Avraham Avinu didn't seem extremely materialistic, and it doesn't seem to me on its face that he would be the kind of person who's looking just to accumulate things. And in fact, later we have a Rashi that indicates he gives away everything he has, you know, between his children with the Bnei Keturah and whatnot, Bnos Keturah. So I don't know. So the question is, what exactly is Avraham Avinu thinking and contemplating when he is all of a sudden excited about gifts? And this is also in light of when he runs into the after the story of the four kings and the five kings, and he says he doesn't want any of the spoils of the war. He says, I don't want anything from this. I'm doing this for different reasons. So if you can explain Avraham Avinu's motivation in getting the gifts, that would be a very interesting and worthwhile enterprise.